You're listening to the NAGRA Podcasters Network. From Port Colborne to Port Dalhousie, from the raging rapids of the Niagara River to Niagara's Gateway in Grimsby, from Fort Erie to Fort George and all the points in between, you're listening to The Regional, a Niagara news magazine from the Niagara Podcasters Network. Thanks for listening to The Regional, Niagara's news magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. It's Saturday, September 2nd, 2017, and we're here to talk about the week's news, wrap it up, and get some insight and some analysis on what happened this week in the region. I am joined by Steve Henschel from Niagara This Week. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Hi, guys.
Janice Arnoldy from Janice and Robin.
Hi, Trevor.
Laura Yip from Underdogs Boxing and...
All the places. Hi, Trevor.
And this week we have in the recording editor's chair is not me, but is Robin McPherson. Thanks for doing the recording today, Robin.
Robin is waving for everybody who can't see her.
Thank you, Robin.
Just all of you.
The radio wave. It's great. So, all right, where do we start? We have this story from Fort Erie. This is about a swimmer. A few wrong words basically sent a swimmer on a wayward course and launched a search and rescue mission. What was the guy's name? Michael Kenny. This race basically starts in Buffalo. Choppy waters. They start the race. This guy sort of and his boat sort of start to lose each other. They panic, or not necessarily panic, but they discover that they can't find him. And so there's this, they basically call off the race and they start looking for him, and he's swimming for shore, completely oblivious to all this going on. What did you guys think of the story when you saw it? Janice, let's start with you.
Well, I thought it was absolutely reasonable that they call off the race. My understanding from reading the story was that the waves were really, really, really high. So it was sort of on a danger of, they were on the cusp of calling the race anyway, was my understanding from that. And it was bad enough that the waves went in his boat and it started to sort of capsize and he kept swimming on, not realizing. And I agree that maybe as, you know, his handler, followers or whatever they are, should have yelled out and stopped him, but you know, he didn't hear them. He kept swimming. Then they start to say, well, where is this guy? We've got his boat. We don't have him, and we need to call off this race because it's become dangerous. So I think it was a valid reason to call off the race.
Yeah. I mean, we had a boat, small boat, right? But yeah, when you get out on those choppy waters, it's really easy to lose someone really quickly. Right. So they could be fine. Sounds like he was swimming along just fine, but his boat can't see him. He's out. Right. No, I mean, the waters were choppy enough because I said I'd bring this up. The waters were choppy enough that swimmers were throwing up while they're swimming. Right. Some of the people on the boats were getting sick because it was so choppy. Now, swimmers and people who are typically on boats, they can handle waves. Right. If the waves are so much that they're getting sick, those are serious waves.
Yeah, I mean, I know we always joke about, oh, safety first. But really, in that situation, you really have to be looking at safety first. Because how do you know that somebody else isn't in the same situation somewhere else in that race, and they've got a limited number of search and rescue people? So, you know, I mean, it's a judgment call for them. I wasn't out on the water, and I know some of the other swimmers were upset, and I wasn't out on the water. But as a, you know, beachside swimming person, I think it was reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's definitely reasonable for them to call the race when he went missing, but I don't think they should have canceled it to begin with. I know a lot of people on social media were saying, why didn't you postpone it by a day? But the point is kind of to do this in choppy water or something challenging. Like, you could just go to a public pool and have him swim 2,000 laps or something if you really want it to be perfectly safe. So I think it's sort of inherent in that type of event. But yeah, anybody who's swimming and puking at the same time, they've got to be a little bit...
Well,
and they're you're swimming in your own puke at that point,
and other people's.
Yeah.
Well, it depends how close you are to the other people. You know,
but your crew, at that point should be pulling you out of the water and saying enough is enough, right? No, I don't think they necessarily should have canceled it before it stopped. I'm sure they have some sort of a guide or a height of wave that they say, okay, this is it, we're not going out. And if it was less than that, lower than that, then have the swim, absolutely, because I know it's that kind of that's the kind of swim. It was you against the lake.
Well, and all of these people involved, the swimmers and the coaches and stuff on the boats, they're familiar with the water, right? They're familiar with the conditions, those kinds of things. So if it was dangerous enough to have stopped it, and it, I'm going to guess that the people who are saying you should have stopped it before it even started probably are not swimmers or boaters, right? Like these.
Well, and also
a bunch of people get in the water, all agree, oh yeah, we're going to get in the water and start this race, even though it looks super dangerous.
Yeah, like, it's not like it's not like a fun swim. I think they don't let just anybody.
And they would not,
thing.
And they would have not have said call it off. If it had been successful, there had been no incidences. It had gone off smoothly, and all the swimmers got to shore.
Yeah,
they wouldn't then have said, "Oh, you should have called it off and never let it happen." It's you're always going to have people who say that. Well, it wouldn't have happened if you didn't let them swim. Well, obviously, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
if you didn't let them
swim, a lot of things wouldn't happen if you didn't do anything.
Right. But if you're not there saying call it off before it happens, then you're going to have a swim, and sometimes they go awry. And
sometimes...
And I mean, what really would have been bad would have been if they hadn't called it.
If they hadn't called it, and if they hadn't called out search and rescue, right? Yeah. I mean, that's... People are going to be complaining because of the expense and everything else. Well, you know what? Sometimes we spend this money, we have these expenses because we're just making sure everybody's fine, right?
Yeah. And you don't want to stop this kind of event from happening.
No.
Well, that's true. And I feel so bad for the guy who sort of caused it all, because he's apparently just been torn apart on social media. But if you're swimming in choppy water, it's...
I don't know how he would hear anything.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I know wakeboarding, like if the boat can be 10 feet from you if you're in the water and you can't hear somebody on board talking to you, like they have to scream. And that's on,
And
nice,
then hopefully
smooth...
you can read their lips. Like,
And you probably wear earplugs too if you're swimming in the water that long.
Why are we not wearing GPS trackers? I mean, come on. Seriously, think about it.
Yeah, it's weird. I have one in my snowboarding jacket.
When you think about it, why wouldn't you have just a little GPS tracker? You'd always know where you are.
Well, that makes it less extreme, doesn't it? I like the risk of somebody getting lost out there. It makes it a little more edgy.
So you're gonna walk across Niagara Falls on a rope?
No, I'm going to watch somebody walk across Niagara Falls on a rope. I'm not saying I want to do it. I want to watch the danger from a safe distance.
Okay.
So we need we basically need the little GPS trackers and then an app for Find My Swimmer, right? That's where we're at. All right.
Map my guide, Find My Swimmer.
Oh, I think you have a new business model, Trevor.
Always thinking the angle. No more laps on this issue. We're now we are now moving to development charges. So Niagara Region instituted new Steve, help me out here. Are they new development charges?
Well, it's an update to the development charge bylaw. So some increased, some decreased. In this instance, the city of Welland has filed an appeal to the OMB. I know a lot of municipalities, particularly in Niagara South End, aren't really happy about it, particularly because the real beef for Welland, at least, is they have all these brownfields, which is like former industrial land that you can't really develop anything but industry on. And in Welland, like their portion of the development charges, they put it at zero for those so they can attract new industries. Through the region, it's a program. There's a certain amount of rebate dollars available, but it has to get approved. So when they're going out to try and get the next food processing plant or whatever, they can't just say it's zero. They can say our portion is zero and maybe the region's portion is zero. So they want them both kind of at zero so they can, attract the industry that's left Niagara over the last 20 to 40 years. And they also have some problems with residential, but I think the brownfield one's a good place to start.
What's everybody's take on this? I mean, Campion is saying that this is limiting investment in Welland and the other communities. Caslin is saying this is what they need to do; otherwise, they're going to have to increase taxes. Where is the middle ground on this? And how is this really impacting the communities? And if so, are there other alternatives that we can explore?
I get it with the brownfields because they're already serviced. Like there used to be a factory there. So, and development charges are to pay for servicing the land. So
that's
really
right.
You're grabbing money that you don't need. It might be just a big cash grab for the region. So I understand that. And I feel so bad for Welland. Like they have tons of those former factories. Mm-hmm. Like there's one, like Atlas Steels is right in the middle of its downtown. All you can really build there is another factory or let it sit empty and slowly crumble. Yeah. And look hideous. It's not a nice thing to drive through when you're pulling into the city.
You can't put residential, like let's be really clear here. You can't put residential on brownfields without serious remediation, right?
Yeah.
And that costs a fortune.
A lot of money.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I think Welland is right on this one, right? That if they're going to be able to attract industry, then the development charges need to be at zero, right? We're having a hard enough time in all of Niagara, right? Welland is one of the hardest hit communities in in Niagara. So no, I think Campion is right that they need to address this so that they're in a better position to be able to track that industry.
I think at very least, if it doesn't go back to zero, there should be some sort of a scale, mm-hmm. right?
Like, well, the brownfield one actually did decrease. They actually decreased it, and they're still appealing it. They want it at zero. Right now, it's...
Oh, so the brownfield one
went down by like 87 cents or something per unit or square or something or other. I don't remember off the top of my head.
So what Welland would like is it to just be taken to zero.
Because right now the region will still offer zero, but you have to, it's not set at zero. You have to apply for it. And there's only a certain amount of rebate. Like the region will write off
that
like,
everybody talks about.
We'll write off like, let's say $10 million worth of brownfield development in a year. So it's not a for sure thing. So when Welland goes out to these trade conferences to try and pitch its land, they can't say for sure that that's going to happen.
Right,
so
right.
It hinders their whole economic development model thing. But,
right. So what I read, which was made me think this is the region, right now they're at 25 million of development charges that they're raising, and for infrastructure they need 50 to upgrade the infrastructure. So seriously, what we're really looking at is the region has let something deteriorate, not done anything to keep the infrastructure updated, and now we're paying to try and play catch up on infrastructure that has just been...
The easiest
apart.
Political decision is always defer it. You see it at council all the time. Is if nobody really has the stomach to deal with it, just push it.
Yeah.
It's probably been doing that for the last 20 years.
It's okay. Someone else can make the decision.
Kick the can down the road.
Yeah. But you're right. Welland and South Niagara is where most of that is happening. I mean, I'm in St. Catharines. Laura's in St. Catharines. We don't have that kind of land, except we've got GM. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what's going to happen with that, really, because once they sell off all of the steel... Will Bayshore stay and do a housing, you know, they were going to do commercial housing, seniors, residents mix.
And that's the thing. Those plans are, we hear about those plans, but we're also
but the remediation,
jaded by Port Dalhousie.
Well, but the remediation costs at GM, we have no idea what those are going to be. So
infinity billion dollars.
And the same thing is with the two hospitals.
Yeah.
So hotel dues down now. And from what I understand, Seasons, which is the seniors company that bought it, is committed to building there. I have no idea what remediation is like at either one of the hospitals. I don't think it's the same extent as
I wouldn't
as
think it's
GM.
The same extent as GM.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be a necessary thing.
So we don't know about what's going to happen there in St. Catharines, but those are pretty much our brownfield places. But there's also a problem with housing, right?
Yeah, so the multi-residential, they shot it up 300%, which is another thing Welland is appealing. So Welland's concern, or at least this is what the mayor and planner have told me, is by that going up so much, there's actually more incentive to just build single detached homes, but that, you know, you have to meet certain provincial density targets. If nobody wants to build multi-unit residential, you have trouble meeting that. And, you know, low-income families, usually it's not single detached homes. They rely on those, you know, rental units. And if nobody's building them, all of a sudden you have a shortfall of affordable housing and all the problems that happen.
Then you start
that.
Talking about appropriate use of the land in an area that is basically, right, we've got the green belt, we've got all of these issues.
Yeah.
We can't keep spreading out, right? We have to start going up. So if all they can build is single detached homes, then what?
Well, it's just more profitable building. They can build multi-unit residential, but the development charge just went up 300%,
right,
which is quite the hike. Like,
yeah.
If my rent went up 300%, I would move in a second.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to. You'd take that to the board and they would be like, no, you can't.
Oh, there's a recourse for that?
Yeah.
I'm uninformed on the whole rental law thing. I just give them my money and they give me a room that I can like crash in.
Well, and I don't even know outside of, and I'm saying this from a long time ago and I actually don't know if this is still the case, but St. Catharines has a height limit on buildings. Something like 8 stories. There's no place to build a house, as you said, in Laura and St. Catharines. We're landlocked and greenbelt locked, which is great, mm-hmm. but we have to go up if we're going to have more people move into St. Catharines. So if we can't go up more than 8 stories and then there's going to be development, you know, I mean, that just really, really puts a strain on building those kinds of buildings. And again, a lot of those buildings would be lower income. We're not talking about $1 million condominiums. Well, there's not enough money in St. Catharines for, you know, buildings and buildings and buildings full of million-dollar condominiums.
Those height limits, though, they can, they're not set in stone. Like, I know I covered a story in Welland a few years back where somebody wanted to build a condo. They have, like, a five-story limit, and you can apply for, like, a bylaw amendment to a specific property to get it a little higher. Usually the city will say something like, all right, but you have to plant 20 trees outside or make sure this pathway is connected or something. They do some bargaining. So you can, that can be increased, but that also there's another cost for the developer. You have to hire a planner to go to council and present that. And then you're still kind of rolling the dice on whether or not it's going to happen. So, and you actually see speculation with that. Like people will buy a property, get the height, get something increased like the height or get it changed to residential, and they don't actually plan to build. They say they're going to build, and then they sell the property, becomes worth more because now you can build an 8-story on it. They sell it to somebody else who might not even do all those things that the city agreed to.
Right.
So it's like this. It's like, yeah, it's a way of, it's kind of like flipping a property. It's like if you renovated a really crappy house, but you're just basically making this property more profitable by changing the zoning and then sort of just shifting it around.
So here's a question for you, Steve, because you seem to have the best handle on this.
I've sat through way too many city council meetings.
Right. Is it reasonable to say that these development fees are going to be applied differently in different, so Welland and, I mean, Welland and Port Colborne have different needs, and Fort Erie has a different need, and St. Catharines has it, and Grimsby, and, you know, all of these places I shouldn't leave Grimsby out of that, but we all have different development needs. Is there a way we should be looking at it and saying, okay, we need a development fee, but this is what it's going to be here. This is what, you know, and so
the region, I don't know if the region could do that because there's two portions. There's the municipal portion and the regional portion. Welland has its own development charges. It charges too, which for Brownfields, as I said, is zero. So I don't know if the region's allowed to do that, play favorites. I think it would be a huge debate at council because, you know, you're going to, in a system like that, you're going to have, you know, haves and have nots, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Regional councillors for St. Catharines say to the, you know, to Mayor Joyner, right? No, you don't get to have different development charges than we do.
And then all of a sudden you hear that northern tier parochialism thing coming down again, which nobody wants to hear because it's always a big bit of a fuss. Yeah, let's say that. Being very careful to watch my language, by the way.
And you're doing a great job.
I know. I'm really impressed with myself.
Someday this is going to take us into the conversation on the need for the two levels of government. But I don't think we have time today to do that.
No, not today. I would love to see a lot of these variances and you know, changing of the bylaws or applications for rebates tied to particularly with residential or higher density residential tied to the provision of affordable housing so that we can get developers to say, you know what, here's the charge if you're doing just your own thing. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to provide affordable housing for our citizens, then here's, you know, the reduced charge that you're going to pay. Make it easier for them to make that decision. And it sounds like because there's these two levels of charges that there's a lot of extra paperwork that's created in that process. And I think this is where a lot of developers start to say regional municipalities or municipalities don't have to deal with this level of interoperation. And so working to streamline that between the municipalities and the region would, I think, go a long way to reducing some of the friction of this.
Well, that and some sort of consistency in the official plans for the municipalities as well, right? So because that affordable housing piece, because nobody's official plan says this is part of it. But if a company opens in Welland, they follow all the Welland's rules, all of that stuff, they decide they're going to go do the same thing in, you know, Grimsby, and Grimsby says, well, no, our plan doesn't permit that, right? That's part of the challenge.
Well, and I think you have to also be clear that you don't pander too much to developers either. Like, these guys are making money on it too, right? Yeah. So that's why I liked what you said about having sort of a balance of, mm-hmm. you know, cost-benefit, because I think sometimes there's this desire to chase its development dollars because it is money coming in. You know, you have people building stuff, so you have people working there. You have, you know, land sales, all that stuff. Like, it brings money into the region, but you don't want to go too far where all of a sudden the taxpayers are paying the most of the brunt to service these new homes. So some guy at some development company, I'm not going to name a specific one because I'll probably get in a lot of trouble, is still making $20 million a year or something off it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they are making money. Like GE didn't move into Welland because it's not making money. And they probably would have still made money even if they had paid development charges because they're GE. They're They're kind of a big outfit, you know. They're a going concern.
They were a super poster child for us. Yeah, the part of that was that they're a big poster child for us, right? I mean, not only is it new business, but it's, you know, smart technology, and so all of a sudden Niagara starts to get a little bit in the news for being a smart tech area. And I'm going to tell you, I moved here almost 20 years ago, and Niagara was going to be the fiber optic superstar of the world, because we are so geographically perfectly placed to be the hub between the states. And, well, that, does anybody see us as a super star?
Fiber optic hub?
You know,
speaking of that hub, that's why there's so many call centers, though. That's why a lot of call centers are located here, because we are on a major telecommunication line. Then we have the unemployed people to fill the call centers as well, which is kind of a very depressing reality. But
yeah, but I don't think that we've I don't think we've had the technology boom here that
We
would have expected in the. And I'm just talking about the way when I did my research about moving down here. It was just one of those things that every community does it, but. But anyway, I get totally off topic there. The thing that interested me that we haven't talked about with the development charges is if these development charges didn't go through, residents would see an increase of about tax increase of about 4% a year over the next 5 years, which is pretty high. And that, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert bookkeeper, so I can't actually figure out how, you know, if that's true or not. But they did vote to delay or to use a 5-year period rollout for the new development charges instead of just doing it, bang, it's going to happen now. So that's something, but that's not what Welland wanted.
Yeah, and well, and they've appealed it to the OMB. They filed it a few days before the deadline. So now the whole thing will kind of be held up while you wait for that process to go through, which I'm assuming, like any bureaucracy, will. It'll take a few months at least, I'm assuming.
Which means I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about it again.
Yeah, when the ruling comes in.
This one was about bringing money in. Now we're going to talk about sending money out. And the region released councillor expenses again this week. And again, near or at the top of the list, Sandy Annunziata. You know, he must miss playing for the Argos because he's spending an awful lot of time in Toronto. And he's actually making us pay for it. He's on a talk show.
Okay, so I'm upset about this because last year when the expenses got released, right, and Annunziata had the highest expenses, there were a number of us in the community who went, no, okay, but everybody settle down. He lives the furthest. Of course, he's got the highest expenses. Like, just relax.
It was reasonable.
Right? Then we find out that, what, $4,100 of that is so he can drive to Toronto to be on the radio. Now I'm upset. now I want $4,100 for all the defending of him that I did.
The crazy part is that they don't have any rules.
Yeah.
So there was no reason. I mean, there's no reason why he couldn't do that, because there's no rule saying he can't do that. Okay, and that to me is absolutely bizarre.
Like, ethically, who is charging that to a government body, right? Like, that's where, even without rules, a reasonable person would go, maybe this is not something that we should be paying for.
If he's going up to Toronto to talk about stuff that's happening in Niagara, that's, in my opinion, that's totally cool. It may be like in the gray area, but at least he's, as a regional councillor, he's doing something to represent, you know, Niagara in as close to, I guess, an official capacity as you can get. That's not what's going on in this.
No.
In his participation.
Why don't we give him 1 kilometer for every time he says Niagara on his radio show?
Yeah, he gets the 52 cents.
Well, but if you read the stories on this, you have to read his quotes. It's his intent that matters here.
Yes.
He intends to promote Niagara.
The intent.
And maybe, you know what? I think he might be intending to promote himself a little bit. And he's, you know, calling himself a D-list celebrity. And if that's the best celebrity Niagara can dig up, like, I'm a little upset. It's like Brock using Rick Campanelli to this day and age to recruit. It's just the time has passed. When did he play for the Argos? Which is kind of a crappy football team, Tie Cats. But
a long time ago. Let's just say a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. Eat 'em raw. Yeah. Like, I'm a Hamilton boy, so obviously no love lost there. But I don't think you can justify things based on intent, because who's to say that? Like, if we sit him down, lie detector test, and say, what was your intent? Was your intent to promote Niagara? Because also, next year's an election year. Getting your name out there is kind of important. And you never know, he might have plans to step up to a higher level of government, maybe run for MP, MPP. He's very active in the MPCA and a lot of other things in the region. So he does definitely has that profile that he could step up. So
I'm not sure he wants to step up his MPCA.
Well, all right.
Profile,
well,
yeah. Right? But so now he's got that, and he's charging us to go to Toronto to be on the radio. He does get introduced as a Niagara.
Right. Yeah. I read that. And I was like, Niagara, oh, okay.
Regional counselor.
There's all the promotion Niagara needs. Well, somebody got introduced as a Niagara.
Well, it's still better than being introduced as a former Argo. So
yeah. Well, let's give him 2 kilometers
okay.
for that.
Right.
So, you know, so he could rack up maybe 10
in an interview. In a year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's time the region came in with some rules. I mean, the only way to stop that is for the
I can't believe they didn't have rules. Like, I sat on St. Catharines City Council now only for a year. I don't think I filed a single expense claim in that year. Not a single one, right? But they had rules. They gave it to, like, I got a book when I took that seat that was like, here's all the rules. And you had to, you know, where were you going? What were you doing? Like, right? So, and Mayor Senzik said this, right? If you're having lunch with someone, who are you having lunch with? Right? So that it can be, it's clear that it was related to city business. Right? I cannot believe 40 years, 41 years or more, the region has existed and they don't have rules for the expenses claimed.
Well, I have to provide more justification to buy batteries for my camera for work to get reimbursed for those. Like,
yeah.
We're talking like 10 bucks of double A's.
Yeah, we should go back the 40 years and probably cost $100 million to do it, but to find out.
Let's get that report.
No, yeah. Or maybe a volunteer citizens committee or something.
I want to know.
Not necessarily. I mean, the region provides data like this now in open format, like open data formats, right? So it is possible to go back and get some of that stuff and do the analysis. And maybe that's something that we look at. The challenge that I have with this is that there will be lots of expenses in Enunziata's list, right, that are perfectly valid.
Yep. Yes.
But now you have to look at the entire body and say, is this okay?
Right.
Is this
okay? Fine.
But shouldn't they be looking at that every year and auditing that? Like, it seems like that's something that should be investigated, because expenses are typically where people sort of
well, and like, who's taking these expenses, right? Because he did this 2015, 2016, right? I can't remember what number the 4100 was for, but that was only 1 year, right? Who at the region is not going, Sandy, don't do this anymore. Right? Like, maybe those trips to Toronto, you shouldn't be.
Apparently nobody.
Yeah, I know. But somebody should be giving them a friendly nudge. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've hit we've all come to agreement on that.
I'm just upset I defended him.
What we've agreed to is that Trevor's going to get all of the open data together and he's going to put it all together.
Yeah, you heard that. He has volunteered to do some digging on this.
You heard that here on the regional.
That could be something that me and our new regional reporter, Austin Gooder, work on over the coming weeks and months. So,
yes.
And maybe share that with a local print media outlet.
Maybe we can partner on that.
Maybe, yeah. I'm pretty busy, but I got some spare time,
I just
next
like that this is how Austin's finding out he's got a new assignment, is listening to the podcast.
Well, if he doesn't listen, he's not going to know. And that's where the headline goes. It's like, Austin!
Yeah, well, then you got him there. You know he's not listening.
Right.
Where's that assignment? If it's not on my desk by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, you're fired.
Are you the editor from Spider-Man?
Yeah, I'm J. Jonah Jameson.
All right, there you go.
I've been practicing the voice, so thank you
practicing the voice,
for being able to pick that out. It makes me really happy inside.
I'm gonna text Austin.
I like
now.
My photojournalist superheroes, you know, like Superman, Spider-Man. I like the ones who are journalists.
I think
does it for me.
I think all journalists, you know, do, because inside they feel like they're superheroes, and I feel that way too. So
it's a good feeling, isn't it? It is. Really.
No, I feel that way about you guys.
Oh, so. I thought you felt that about yourself. And I wasn't going to blame you. I was like, it's a great feeling. But thank you. Thank you.
Rolling back that tape. Yeah, it probably might have sounded that way. But no, it's festival season here in Niagara. There seems to be like a festival going on every 4 or 5 hours this weekend.
That's because there is.
This weekend, we have the Marshville Festival out in Waynefleet, right? We have the Labor Day festivities in Meriton, M-Town represent. And we have the Greek Fest in the north end of St. Catharines. I imagine I'm probably missing some of the festivals.
Probably 12 other festivals.
There's probably something going on in every municipality throughout the region.
Probably a rib fest somewhere.
It's got to be at least two rib fest.
Do those even count though as like a true festival?
Well, because they say fest in the name, I think so. That's the only criteria, I think.
I guess so. Yeah.
That's a lot. But so, do you guys enjoy festival season? Do you participate? I'm a big fan of the Labor Day stuff because I was born and raised in Meriton, right? So it's always had a place in my heart. What about you guys though?
Well, we are called the festival.
Capital?
Oh, capital. Thank you. We are the festival capital of Canada. Yes. I believe we have more festivals in the per calendar year than anything else. I personally live down the street from at least two festivals because I live down from Montebello Park. So I live down from
I lived across the road from there once before.
Right? Rib Fest, if we're going to qualify that as a festival because it's a weekend gathering of people. And then Niagara Wine Fest, Grape and Wine. Which I love because it's
and
noisy
never
and there's
stop
a lot
calling
of
it Grape and Wine. We may as well just say that.
No, I think actually, I think they're actually officially going back to calling it Grape and Wine.
Yeah. So much resistance for 10 years. Yeah. They'll forget it. We'll just call it Grape and Wine again.
It was a valiant effort.
Yeah.
What's wine made from?
I know. That's why none of us.
Grapes. That's why we celebrate.
Well, the whole festival thing was because they have the Ice Wine Festival and they have. So that, I think now you just take Niagara Wine Festival and then you divide it into its actual events, and that's Grape and Wine. I love Grape and Wine. I don't go to the park anymore because it's way too expensive. Grape and Wine people, not the wineries at all, charging that amount of money. But I love having the people around, and I like to people watch. Do I go to other festivals? I did go to Marshville a couple of years ago because I thought I'll go and see what that's like, and it was fun. And I've been to the one in Port. And Port Colborne.
Canal Days.
Yep. Thank you. I've really got a clear mind about festivals. But I do like going to some of them. But mostly in the summer, I just like hanging out around my house. So, but they get crowds. Mm-hmm. Greek Fest is fantastic. And the Faces Street Festival, if you didn't go, was absolutely amazing this year. The growth from last year was fantastic.
Yeah.
No, there's some great festivals. Marshville's really neat for a family. It's they do that really well, the Pioneer Festival. I actually went to a new festival in Niagara last weekend, though, Slider Fest. The Fawn Hill Lions put it on. About 375 people came out, and all they did was just five restaurants competing for the best slider, which is like a little tiny hamburger. There were some pretty unique creations. I think next year they're actually going it to be like Best Fest. So there's going to be a couple. There's going to be like Best Taco, Best Slider, Best. So that's a neat new development, you know, to add to the list of things you have to make an appearance at in the summer or might want to make an appearance at. I can never go to another Rib Fest again. I just can't. I have Rib Fest PTSD after like my first summer at the paper. It's too much.
Steve, is festival fatigue a thing?
Oh, I think absolutely.
Is it actually a thing?
It definitely is. For somebody in my line of work, for sure. And I think it actually for some people, it's in like event management stuff. Yeah, it's definitely a thing. And I think even for the public, sometimes it can seem like there's always something going on and you might miss that, you know. The best festival
like
to me is my
downtown.
Own my own private Steve Henschel festival on the back deck with, you know, some beer and a barbecue. That's a good festival to me. Maybe three people invited.
Call it No Fest, right?
Yeah, No
that's
Fest.
I was going to call it No Fest.
No Fest. New long weekend for the summer. No Fest.
And if you want to get all the festivals over at once, I'd like to propose another festival that we do basically on a weekend when there's no other festivals happening. So possibly,
that doesn't exist.
Possibly after No Fest. And we call it Fest Fest, and it's a meta festival, and we do all the festivals all at once, and it's just like each booth is a festival.
So like a tall ship covered in grapes, shooting ribs out of its cannons or something like that.
I love where you are going with this. I think this definitely has potential.
It's gold. I definitely copyright that idea, by the way.
I will say though, with the festivals, and honestly, the festivals are spread around the region, which is what I think is pretty cool because a couple of things happen. One is there's always a festival happening in the area that you live, but the only reason that I've been to Waynefleet was because of the Marshville Festival, and I don't know anybody who lives there. I didn't really have any other reason to go.
Beaches,
yeah, but I'm not a beach person, so I didn't even know how to get to Waynefleet, and I went to the Marshville Festival, and I loved it. So it does. It gets you out into different areas in the region. If you got to have a car. because you can't get transportation, which is another topic.
Definitely not Twain Fleet.
Before we wrap up, does anybody have anything that they want to talk about? Stuff that you have coming up, things that you're doing, projects you're working on, that sort of thing?
Why are you looking directly at me?
Because all right. You're right across the table from me, A. B, I happen to know, because I'm also involved, that you're working on some pretty cool things.
So, yeah, there's some cool stuff going on. So, we are starting a boxing club in St. Catharines called Underdogs Boxing. It's located at 17 Secord Drive, and we're aiming for a grand opening October the 1st. This is relevant to the entire community because we're trying to fill the gap, what we feel is a very large gap between boxer size, which is a good cardio workout, but really you're just throwing your hands in the air. There's no boxing technique involved in that, and the traditional male-dominated training fighters kind of boxing club. Right. So there'll be memberships, that sort of thing. And we're trying to keep the costs as low as we can to also ensure that it is accessible to as many people as possible. We've also set up sort of a program where people can donate because it's a nonprofit association. We're not charitable yet, but they can donate so that people in the community who are experiencing poverty can also have memberships. But the other thing that we're doing, which is the motivation for starting Underdogs, is through YWCA Niagara Region. We received funding from the Ontario Trillium Foundation to offer a program called Shape Your Life. It's been running in Toronto for 10 years, founded by Kathy Van Ingen, who is a professor at Brock University, and Joanne Green, who's the executive director of Opportunity for Advancement. The program is for women survivors of violence, and it helps them, you know, reconnect mind and body, build confidence, self-esteem, all of those things, but also the research on trauma indicates that people who've experienced those sorts of physical traumas require a physical outlet to work through the trauma, right? So they need to engage in the talk therapy and all of those things, absolutely. But they also need that physical release of it to work through. So we're super excited to have that partnership with the YWCA and to be able to offer this program.
Where can people find out more if they're interested?
Well, our website, underdogsboxing.org, or at underdogsboxing on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. That'll get you where you need to be.
Just to go back to the festival thing, I would be remiss to not just say that the Niagara Food Festival has been reborn. It was there for like 20 years and well, and they're bringing it back.
I thought you were going to announce the date for NoFest.
No. I'll be back for that. But last weekend in September, they're bringing that back in downtown Welland. So,
that's great.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know that.
So yeah, some local businesses have kind of just banded together to bring it all together. It's going to be a big street festival. So I figured I should mention that. And I guess a welcome back to Niagara students. It's good to see Thorold again abuzz with activity. So, and just don't be too loud, guys.
Where can people find you guys on social media if they want to hear more about things that you're saying? Janice?
You can find me in two places, at Janice Arnoldy, or follow my podcast, my Niagara Podcasters Network podcast, which is Our Minds Matter, and the Twitter handle is at Minds Matter Pod.
I'm pretty much just a Twitter guy, so at Welland NTW, Welland Niagara this week. If you can find me on Facebook, it's not my real name, but if you find me, I'll add you because you've earned it at that point.
I feel like that was a challenge put out to the listeners, right? It's like everybody's going to start stalking Steve now on social media.
It's not Steve though on social media.
I know,
media.
But that's why they're going to stalk you. Like it'll be stalking because it's not your real name. Like now it's gone to another level. Easiest way is probably for me on Twitter at L Yip, but there's two underscores between the L and the IP.
And you can find me everywhere at Trevor Twining, or you can follow Niagara Podcasts at Niagara Podcasts. That wraps up this episode of the Regional Niagara's News Magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. I want to say thank you to all of our guests for joining us today. Laura, Steve, and Janice, thank you very much.
Thank you,
thank
Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we will see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Regional Niagara's News Magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. The executive producer is Trevor Twining. The music is by Scott Holmes, used with permission. If you have an idea for a story for the Regional, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at Niagara Podcasts, or you can send us an email at niagarapodcasters@gmail.com.
That was like the most painful closing ever.
Do you want me to? I really enjoyed it.